Mitzvah Shin Samech Ches 368. Shelo Yishteh Hanozir Yayin O Kol Mine Sheikhar. That a Nazir, someone who has taken a Nazirite vow, he's restricted from certain things, coming into contact with a dead body, and cutting his hair, and drinking wine. So from the title of the mitzvah, it sounds like not only is he not allowed to drink wine, but he's not allowed to drink any intoxicating beverages. So he's not allowed to drink scotch and bourbon and things like that either. Maybe even Schmerling's chocolate liqueur, which we could debate whether that's really considered an intoxicating beverage. But that we'll see in a minute that that's not the case, that it has to be specifically grape-based. Yeah.
The only kind they had was beer in those days, you know, as far as very short. So in other words, distillation hadn't been.
Well, they had grain beer, they had date beer,
Right. So
in other alcoholic beverages.
They didn't distill in the late medieval period, they weren't distilling.
Distillation had not, actually, yeah.
We're talking about the chumash. It says chumetz yayin v'chumetz sheichar.
The first was chumash, but also I don't think they had distillation in that particular time. I think it came in later, maybe.
Right, but the point is not whether it's distilled or not. The point is whether what it's made of. So it sounds like alcohol. I was using scotch and bourbon as modern examples, but it would have applied in those times to just date beer and grain beer, which were the major other alcoholic beverages. When the Gemara says, in fact, sheichar. When it talks about other alcoholic beverages besides wine, it's really referring to a date beer and not grain beer. It does talk about grain beer sometimes, but the stam beer that was in the times of Chazal was actually date beer and not grain beer.
In the Middle East.
Right, yeah. Shelo yishteh ha-nozir yayin. In the Gemara when it says sheikhar. So that a nozir should not drink wine. O kol mine sheikhar shi ikar eruvo yayin shehu mechal ha-novim. That the main ingredient in the other alcoholic beverages has to come from grapes. So that would not be allowed either. If you have we'll discuss the parameters later, but if you have a mix of dates and grapes or something like that, then that would still not be allowed. Avilu mechal shar peros afal pish nikra sheichar lunesra anozer ela betaroves hayotze min hagefen. So if you have alcoholic beverages that are made from the juice, the extract of other fruits, then they're called sheichar in certain times. But when the Torah over here says the word sheichar, it means specifically grape product. So only if a grape product is mixed in with the other fruits would it be prohibited for a nazir. But a nazir could get as drunk as he wants on Calvados. Ve'al zeh nemar miyayin v'sheichar yazir, that he should distance himself from wine and alcoholic beverages. V'chol mishras anovim lo yishteh. And he should not eat anything soaked in grapes, or grape juice in this case. The hiflig, so in other words, that it doesn't even just mean pure wine, but anything that you could describe it as being soaked in grapes, that if he's going to explain at length later, if the grape forms a significant proportion of the mixture, it would be prohibited.
But whole grapes are fine, though.
No, whole grapes are not fine. No. We're talking about we'll get to the grapes later. But here we're just talking about the grape juice. One of these grapes. The grapes are for wine, Grapes are no. Grapes, the grapes that are not good for using for wine, we sell in the stores. But the ikar mahus of the grape, that's why God created grapes, was to provide us with wine and not to provide us with snacks. The hiflig b'menia v'amar shafilu nischame tzayayin, that even if the wine went spoiled, it became vinegar. Or even other alcoholic beverages that had an admixture of wine. Also, so he's not allowed to drink it. He can't drink the vinegar of wine or the vinegar of alcoholic beverages that have an admixture of wine. He's not allowed to drink. So you can't have a salad, even a salad where you have balsamic vinegar as a dressing of the salad. A nozer would not be allowed to eat that. So vinegar would be a problem as well. You would have to use apple cider vinegar or grain vinegar or something like that if you wish to dress your salad. Ve'ein elu shnei lavin.
Wait a second. but okay, yeah, yeah.
Ve'ein elu shnei lavin, the chometz yain and the is not a separate prohibition. Kolomer lav b'yain ve'lav echad b'chometz, that one is a prohibition of vinegar, one is a prohibition of wine. Shelo amar yain lo yishte v'chometz lo chametz yain yishte. It doesn't say separately you shouldn't drink wine, you shouldn't drink a wine vinegar. Ve'lamadnum, it just says chometz yain v'chometz shechar lo yishte. It just means ve'lamadnum me'atag yeshosa yain v'chometz eino lo kelachas. You only receive one set of lashes if you drink wine and wine vinegar, because all one prohibition, the Torah lumps it together, that chometz yain v'chometz shechar lo yishte, that it's an explanation of the prohibition of wine, or an attacked on to the prohibition of wine that it said before. It doesn't formulate each one separately. What is the purpose of the prohibition of Nazir? Well, we're going to have to wait to find out, because we have the mixed up order of the Sefer HaChinuch, that we have the order of the Torah, and he did in the order of all the mitzvahs Haseid and the Los Haseid, so we'll find out in a few mitzvahs from now what the reasoning behind the mitzvah of Nazir is. V'godal archokos ha-Nazir mikol tarov ha-zayayin ha-kol min ha-tam ha-kosuv sham, that we have to make sure the Nazir stays very, very far away from all grapes, as we have explained over there, which we will see in a few mitzvahs. Midini ha-mitzvah, what are the halachos? Masha'amru zichron levracha shekol ha-yotze min ha-gefen, anything that comes from the grapevine. Bein pri, bein psolis. Whether it's a fruit or whether it's not fruit. It would normally be considered like garbage. Kilomer hazag shehi haklipa. The grape peel is prohibited. Even if you would separate it from the fruit inside, you would not be allowed to eat the grape peels. Ve'achartzan shu hazera shebisocho usur lenozer. And the grape seeds are also usur. So grape seeds, they are edible. You know, I have a disagreement with my wife. She likes seedless grapes. I like seeded grapes. Like, I think I find the seeds give it a nice crunch. She thinks it's disgusting. Okay. So the...
Aren't they very bitter?
A little bitter, but I find they enhance the experience of the grape. Okay.
Okay.
Fine. So the seeds are normally eaten with the grape, unless you spit out the seeds, okay? But if you want, even if you would separate the seeds and eat them alone, they are a little bitter, but the Torah decrees that they are prohibited. So this comes, it says explicitly in the Torah that all the parts of the grape are prohibited for a nazir. But the leaves and the shoots and the vines, including the sap from the vine, and the buds. So all these, hare elu mutarin, these are all permissible, she'enan lo pri velo psoles el kemo eitz, same nechshavim. These are not like the fruit, they're not like the rejects from the fruit, but they're less than the rejects from the fruit, they're just like a tree, just like part of the tree. So a nazir would be allowed to eat. If he lives in Turkey, he would starve without this. Stuffed grape leaves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He would be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So wait. Now, by the way, these are all derisa, or some of these derbanan?
Those are all derisa.
All derisa, okay.
Mechartzanim v'ad zaglo yochel. It says specifically in the...
Grape seed oil is a question, and grape leaves are okay.
Correct. Okay. Are you taking notes for when you become an Ozer?
No, I think the more interesting question behind all this is why would somebody become an Ozer, but that's not what he's...
We'll get into it. We'll be in the... when we get to the explanation of the reasoning behind it in a couple of mitzvahs from now. The Yeser Rube Prati Amitzvah Mivoarin Memasechta Benuyal Zev Himasech as Nazir. Of course, explained the Masech as Nazir. Benoy Yeser Zev Bin Zachar Munikevos. It's found in... it applies to males and females, as sort of... Now you know the answer to Rav Shechlis Bechina for his getting into the kolok. Can a woman be an Ozer? Bechol makom uvechol zman, in all places and all times, shekol yemei shenadar nezirus chayev lahazir miyayin v'sheichar v'chol betzayin v'chol metzheichar v'chol mishras anon. So you have to refrain from all these things during the entire duration of the period of your nezirus. V'over alzeh v'shasa revius lug yayin o'achol kezayis anovim lachem o yeveshim o mipsolas shalem shuach artzani v'azayin chayim alkes. You see blashes if you, yeah?
What does a nazir do on Pesach, the arbakozos?
Can't drink it.
Oh, so it just has what?
Arba goes the Rabbanan, and Nazir is
Deraisa.
Okay,
all right.
You have no choice.
Just to cut to the chase, can a woman be a Nazir?
Yeah, the Noah Gisus Zebiz Chaimon gave us. Everyone's the males and females, and it says explicitly in the Torah. Isho Isha Ki Aflili Ndor Neder Nazira.
All the fun stuff is allowed for women, you know.
Yeah, that's the joke is that Rav Schechter always asked that as the not always I didn't ask get asked that but he often used to like to ask that as the entrance exam to Bechina to the get into the goal because people he would start asking about Nazir and people would get all nervous, you know, what he's asking about vows, like what do I know about a Nazir, I never learned this in yeshiva, we learned Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, you know, I don't know anything about vows, oi, but how can I answer this question? And really the answer is explicit in the pasuk in the Torah, Isho Isha Ki Aflili Ndor Neder Nazir, that a woman can in fact be a Nazir. Okay. So Arba Koso, so the Gemara actually discusses, this is interesting, that discusses the issue of Kiddush and Havdalah as well. So this is a discussion over here. So based on that discussion about what a Nazir needs to do for Kiddush and Havdalah, that's why some Rishonim actually state that Kiddush al Hayayin is Daraisa. That using a cup of wine for Kiddush is a biblical requirement, which is obviously a minority shita. It's very hard to understand. The majority opinion of the poskim, the Rambam, the later poskim, paskin like this as well, is that using a cup of wine for Kiddush is only the Rabbanan, and on a deraisa level, as long as you say the words that praising and declare the sanctity of Shabbos, or you would say the mitzvah of Kiddush.
Well, you can make it on challah or on bread, right?
So the fact that there is an institution, according to most Rishonim, of making Kiddush on bread also casts doubt on what's required deraisa, because if wine is required deraisa, how could you make it on bread? Unless you say that the formulation was that you could either make it on wine or bread, which is, we have no source for that whatsoever, so what exactly is going on? But that that is a good question. Some Rishonim do state that it would be that it is a requirement deraisa to make Kiddush on wine. So on when it comes to the Arba Kozos, so a Nazir would have no choice but to use Chamar Medina. You'd have to use beer, not grain beer, date beer, or another type of beverage that is kosher
Hard
Pesach.
Cider. Is that even available?
Hard
is
cider.
Kifut have date beer?
I don't think Kifut has it, but probably if you looked in the Middle East somewhere. There are other beverages that could constitute Chamar Medina that are Hard more side. Common. The truth is Chamar Medina... There is one sheet like this, but the Pasha says that Chamar Medina does not need to be alcoholic, that it just needs to be a chosh of a beverage in that time and place. Coca-Cola, probably not, because it's just flavored water. It has to have some sort of chosh of a process, like brewing or cooking. So that's why, according to many poskim, tea and coffee are considered to be Chamar Medina, mm-hmm. even though it's also just water. You know, wine is also mostly water chemically. But nevertheless, since it had an actual process that transformed the beverage as opposed to just sprinkling some sugar into the water, so it could be potentially be considered to be Chamar Medina. But according to the understanding that I like, that they're really... It's hard to say that there is a Chamar Medina really in America, because a basic principle of Chamar Medina, according to many, is that it has to be in a place where wine is not found very much, and you have to drink... People drink these beverages in important meals instead of wine because it's just not available. But here we have so much wine available that really the concept of Chamar Medina is not applicable. Others say it has to be, there has to be one beverage that can be singled out as being the chush of a beverage in that place.
Coffee.
So here in America, there's no such thing. And in Japan... You have sake. That's the national, chush of a beverage that people serve to each other at important occasions. In Germany, maybe beer. They have wine also, but okay. Germany, maybe beer. Obviously, that wouldn't work for Pesach, but for Havdalah, maybe you could use beer. So other examples.
What is sake made of?
You know? Rice.
Grappa.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, it really... Right, so the point is that there has to be one beverage in that place that really takes the cake. So since, in America, they really, one should not use Chamar Medina, in my opinion, ever, unless you're really in a pinch and there really, you absolutely have no wine available, but you should not use any other beverages besides wine for Kiddush and Havdalah. I mean, Kiddush Shabbos morning.
What?
If you're a Nazir, we could talk, but if you're not a Nazir... you should use dafka wine or grape juice always for kiddush and Havdalah. You could make kiddush in shul on schnapps, and then you go home and you make kiddush on wine or grape juice. There's a kiddush in shul, so if it's not in the place of where the actual meal is being eaten, so it's not as important. But
somebody else makes it for you, then obviously it solves the problem too. So.
Right. Okay.
Oh.
Wait, but what about in Israel now?
So in Israel, it's even worse.
Because wine is...
Because they don't really... They don't even in America, we have fresh orange juice, for example. So fresh orange juice, according to some, is a chamar medina in America because... You know, people drink that for the taste and to serve with important meals. Sometimes people serve orange juice. But in Israel, they don't. Right. Fresh orange juice is considered to be like a real luxury. People don't have it that much. Tropicana, you know, they talk about how they long for their visit to America and they're fresh actual orange juice. So even though, you know, it isn't available in Israel and it's more expensive, so some people say it could still maybe be chamar medina in Israel because it's still considered very chashuv. It's just that people don't drink it that much because it's so expensive. But
in Israel,
it's even the situation regarding chamar medina is potentially even worse than in America. But in both places, lemaisa, you should only make kiddush and havdalah, at least when it's a real kiddush, Shabbos morning on wine or grape juice. So some people have the minhag that motze pesach, they make kiddush on havdalah on beer, because they say, oh. You know, the point of the mitzvah of Kiddush and Havdalah is that it's supposed to draw your attention to saying these words of holiness and praise in this mitzvah because, oh, great, I'm so excited to drink this cup of wine, and, oh, before I drink the cup of wine, I have to say Kiddush on Shabbos, so it really draws my attention to the Kiddush because I associate it with a cup of wine, which I love, and, okay, some people don't like wine. Okay, fine. So on Motzei Pesach, the beverage that will most draw in people's longing and attention is something that they haven't had for a week. Oh, they went a week without beer, so they want.
Hold of it. I guess you have to run out to.
Either you sold it and it was became unsold, you bought it back, or you run out to the Goyisha supermarket and you get some beer right away. So that's why some people had this minhag to make havdalah on beer on Motzei Pesach, but I say one should not do this, so one should make havdalah on Motzei Pesach on. Wine as well, because of the shailas about what exactly constitutes chamar medina. You also get into this problem when Tisha B'Av falls on.
You have to turn the house back over. You're getting beer all over the kitchen. I mean,
Who says all over the kitchen? All over the kitchen. All over the kitchen.
Paper cups. Okay.
Yeah, take a little. Go into a separate room.
Okay.
Okay. You don't have to get it.
Okay.
All over the kitchen. So what was I saying?
Tisha B'Av,
right. When Tisha B'Av falls on Motzei Shabbos, so you get into this problem as well, because according to the accepted psak, even though not everyone agrees with this, you have to if you're eating on Tisha B'Av, you have to make Havdalah before eating. So you have a problem because you're not allowed to drink wine. It's still part of the 9 days. It may even be worse than the 9 days, because we know that the issue of drinking wine during the 9 days is just a minag, but the isser of drinking wine in the Suda Hamafsekes, in the last meal before Tisha B'Av, is a real halacha. That's the Mishnah already says that you're not allowed to drink wine in the Suda Hamafsekes before Tisha B'Av. So, obviously, that applies on Tisha B'Av itself. You're not allowed to drink wine. Mm-hmm. So the question is how you can make Havdalah. So some people in that situation are makel to use Chamar Medina, which again I would consider somewhat questionable, and I would say it would be preferable to use grape juice. Why grape juice? Because according to the Mishnah, grape juice is permissible in the Suda Mafsekes because grape juice doesn't gladden you. So our minhag is that we lump grape juice together with wine, and we don't drink grape juice the entire 9 days.
Right.
But here, Alpi Halacha, according to the strict Mishneiach halacha, you'd be allowed to drink grape juice even in the Sudam of Sekes. The technical halacha that you're not allowed to drink it doesn't apply on Tisha B'Av either. So one should make Havdalah on a grape juice specifically if one needs to make Havdalah on Tisha B'Av before eating. Vafilu achal kezayis bein hakol. Even if so the shear is a kezayis if it's something that's eaten, and the shear is a revius if it's something that's drunk. A revius is 75 milliliters, according to the basic halacha, which is a little bit over 2.5 ounces. And the kezayis is the size of an olive. Okay, can all agree on that?
A real olive.
Vafilu achal kezayis bein hakol. Even if you combine things to make a kezayis. What does that mean? If you take a little bit of grape skin and a little bit of grape seeds, then if you combine them together, and the total amount was a kezayis, you would still be liable to lashes. You don't need each thing individually. You don't need a kezayis of grape seeds or a kezayis of grape skins. Shekoli suri nozer mitstarfin zeim zele chazayis lehilokos Alehen. So all the prohibitions of another can combine together to form the requisite shear to receive the penalty of Malkus for eating it. Aval Sha'ari Surin Sheba Torah, the rest of the Torah prohibitions, Ein Mitztarfin Zeim Zeh, they do not combine with each other. So, for example, if you would eat half a kezias of pork and half a kezias of shrimp, and you would eat it together, then you would not receive the penalty of Malkus, because they're totally different things. They wouldn't hear there, it's the same genre. There, it's different genres. Chutz mi besar nevela im besar trefa. One exception is that if you eat the some meat that was improperly slaughtered or died naturally, that, and you combine that with another tiny piece of meat that was a trefa, meaning that it was did have a kosher slaughter, but it had a defect that rendered the animal a trefa. So those two things would combine to form a kezias, and you would receive malchus if you ate half a kezias of trefa and half a kezias of nevela. What's the reason?
The same species.
Why is it the same genre?
Well, genre. It's both meat.
Both meat?
No.
No, if you eat a kezias of pork and a kezias of bat, so then that's also it's also both meat, right?
Oh, the punishment is right there in the doing of it. Who wants to eat bat?
Why? Maybe it's delicious. I don't know. So
are you talking about an animal that normally would be kosher, but just because of
correct, right? Correct, correct.
I see. Mm-hmm.
The reason is, this is a famous...
It could be kosher, but it isn't.
Exactly. It's a famous brisker chakira, though it's one of the more pushit brisker chakiras that probably is true, which is that, as formulated, it says that a trefa, an animal that's a trefa, has a chisaron in the heter shchita. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? A ritual slaughter cannot be fully effective for an animal that's a trefa, mm-hmm. because a trefa, as the Rambam formulates it, is already partially dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's on its way out. If it has a severe defect that's going to cause it to die shortly, it's already started the death process. So if you give it a kosher slaughter, it saves it from becoming tamei, imparting ritual uncleanliness, because it lemaisa had a proper slaughter and it's not a nevela, but you're not allowed to eat it because the slaughter can not be 100% effective. It can only be 50% effective
because it didn't entirely kill it.
Because it didn't. It wasn't 100% the slaughtering that fully killed the animal. So that's why the nevela and the trefa are the same genre. That one completely died of its own accord and didn't have any shechita, and one partially died of its own accord. So that's why a nevela and a trefa can combine together to form the shear of a kezias, and if you have half a kezias of trefa and half a kezias of nevela, you will receive the penalty of malchus. Also, v'shisha dvarim shebekorban toda, if let's say you have a korban toda, Thanksgiving offering that was not properly executed, and which consists of an animal as well as a flour cake. So, shehein, chelev, ubasar, the fats that are burned on the altar, and the meat, v'soles, v'shemen, v'yayin, v'lechem, and the fine flour, and the oil, and the wine, and the bread, gamken mitstarfen. So all these, if you took a tiny piece of all these aspects of the Toda offering, even though they're totally different, one's flour, one's meat, one's fat, one's oil, totally different. If you took a kezias of, a tiny bit of each until they all formed the kezias, or any combination thereof, then you would also receive the penalty of Malkus, because they're all part of the same thing. V'ein tzorech lomar shekol davar mishu shem echad shemitztarif kigo nivlas shor v'nivlas sev v'nivlas tzvi v'chol kayotzi v'zeh. If they're mamish, basically the same thing. The whole prohibition is because of the same type of thing itself, the same prohibition itself, then they would be mitztarif, they would all combine to form a kezias. So if you have, for example, a sheep that died of its own accord, and you have a... we call it deer, but it's really a gazelle. Mm-hmm. and also an ox, whatever, all these different things that died of their own accord, they're all kosher animals. They would be shechted, you could eat as much of them as you like. But since the prohibition is not that they're separate animals, separate non-kosher animals, but that they all had a shem nevela, the only reason that they're prohibited is because they didn't have a proper kosher slaughter, then if you would take a little bit of each, then they would combine to form the shear of a kezias to receive the penalty of lashes. V'limdunu zichron av l'racha, our sages tell us, she'iser be'iser hu she'mitztarev l'chazayis be'ilu she'zacharnu, aval heter eino mitztarev l'iser b'chol ha'isurin she'betorah. So in those situations, you have two different things that are prohibited that form a kezias altogether. But if, for example, you have a sandwich, and you have a ham sandwich, and you take a bite of the ham sandwich, and you didn't eat a kezias of the ham, but you had half a kezias of the ham and half a kezias of bread. Bread is usually kosher. In such a situation, you would not receive the penalty of lashes, even though you ate a kezias of something not kosher, the ham sandwich. Nevertheless, since the actual prohibited item, the ham, was not a kezias, then you would not receive the penalty of lashes. Even if it's mamish mixed together. So example, like I was talking about a ham sandwich, where they eat both somewhat distinct. But let's say you really mixed it together in a way that they couldn't really be separated from each other. Nevertheless, you would still not receive the penalty of lashes unless there was a kezias of the prohibited substance. Bein bi surei nazir, bein v'chol shari surin, whether regarding a nazir or for anything else. V'afilu bekotchim v'asur b'cholo v'giulei goyim shi'esh b'hem tzas chidish. K'moshim v'furish b'psachim v'v'nazir. Gam kem ikevich locha gazayis min iser, ein chiyo malkos b'adavar lo'olam. So even things where they introduced something that you wouldn't have expected. So you might think, So basar b'cholov. So meat is permissible, and milk is permissible. But you cook them together, they become asr. Nevertheless, you wouldn't say heter mitzdarf to isr if basar b'cholov got mixed with something else. Then you would not say that the combination would result in a prohibition of malchus. Also, if you cooked something in a pot that contain the blias from a non-Jewish cooking, from non-kosher cooking, the stuff that the pot absorbed. The pot absorbed taste from a non-kosher item. So you might think that in such a situation, let's say now you cooked something else in the pot, and the pot exuded its taste. We'll get the taste more in a couple minutes. But even if somehow you would have a heter mitzdarif le'isr type of situation where the permissible item was mixed with the stuff that was imbued by the pot, then it would still not be it would not contribute to the kezias that would be required to receive the penalty of malchus. Shein halacha k'Rabbi Akiva disvir lehachi maseches nazir perek shlosh minin. V'yalif la mikra divchol mishras. So the Torah tells us that anything soaked in grape or grape products is prohibited to a nazir. So Rebbe Akiva learns from this that, in fact, heter is mitzdarif le'isur. If you eat something, if you have one eating, and you eat something prohibited that's combined with something permitted, if the whole thing, including the permissible substance, is a kezayis, you would still receive the penalty of malchus. So the way Rebbe Akiva learns this out is from the fact that the Torah says soaked. So let's say he thinks it means that if you soaked bread in wine, right? This used to be a common Middle Eastern method of eating, that they used to soak bread in wine, as it says in Megillas Rus, right? What does it say? B'tavalt piteich b'chometz. That when Boaz invites Rus to eat, he invites her to dip her bread in vinegar, wine vinegar. That was a common way of eating bread. You could try it at home. Get some red wine, white wine, balsamic vinegar, whatever. Dip your bread in it. You might find that it's tasty. So the Torah says you're not allowed to eat anything dipped in or soaked in grape products. So Rebbe Akiva holds that if you take bread and you dip it in wine, and you eat the bread, and there's a kizayis of the bread mm-hmm. and wine together, then you would receive the penalty of Malkus. But that's not how we hold the halacha. We hold heter, it's not mitzaref le'isser, that the permissible item does not combine with the prohibited item. El halacha kerabonan de pligi aleyu, mok me haikra hasam v'cheinu maseches psachim. Rather, we, the chachamim, interpret the kol mishrasa novim to mean lilmod mi menu sheta'am ha'isser osur kimo ikaro. There's a major principle in the Torah in general, which is that if only the taste of a prohibited item was imbued into a permissible item, mm. then the whole mixture becomes prohibited. We know this.
What does that mean? How do you determine?
How do you determine what?
Correct.
Taste has...
Your taste has... I mean, if you...
It may taste like that to you, but not to me.
Generally speaking, no. So you're worried that you whether or not caused your big vat of chicken soup to taste like chaser, you have some guy come over and say, what does this taste like?
That's Dina de Gemara, yeah. So how do you determine it? So we know the magic number of 60. That if something not kosher falls into a pot of kosher food, so if you in general there are a lot of details, obviously, but if in general, if something not kosher falls into a pot of kosher food, then if you have 60 times the permissible food, then it's a kosher. But if you have less than 60 times, so we assume that the non-kosher item imparted its taste to the mixture, and you'd not be allowed to eat it. So according to the Dina de Gemara, the strict Talmudic law, it says that you could consult a non-Jewish chef. You bring in a non-Jewish chef,
ask him to taste
and you ask him to taste it, and if he tells you that it tastes like whatever fell in, pork, whatever, if it says your chicken soup now tastes like pork, then you are not allowed to eat it. But if he says there's no taste of pork, then you are allowed to eat it. So it's a machlokas rishonim.
What was the pork doing in your house in the first place?
Dog food. I don't know. Yeah.
I can understand. Okay, the cheese fell in the
or maybe it's cheese. A nevela.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe it's an avail. Okay. Maybe you're a shochet. Maybe you shechted a chicken and you discovered you made a mistake and you left the chicken lying around.
Like chicken anyway.
I didn't say it was chicken soup that you were cooking.
Okay.
I mean, any type of soup, whatever.
Tomato
so,
soup.
So it's a machluk as we showed him actually whether it specifically has to be a non-Jewish chef or it could be any non-Jew. So the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch Paskin, it could be any non-Jew. Mm-hmm. The Gemara was just talking about the general who you generally ask to taste your food would be a chef. But we should say no, it has to be specifically a non-Jewish chef because he has to risk his reputation.
Yeah.
Let's say he tastes the thing and he says, oh, this doesn't taste like pork. And, oh, Mr. Jew, go ahead, this is permissible for you. And then the Jew tastes it. This does taste like pork.
How does he know?
It has a funny taste that he doesn't recognize, whatever. This does taste like pork. Now he posts on his Facebook page that chef so-and-so couldn't even taste pork in my chicken soup. He calls himself a chef. So he has to risk his professional reputation, whereas Stama Goy is going to taste your soup and he's going to say, nah, I don't think it tastes like pork. Whatever, a Jew, don't bother me with these things anymore. And then the Jew tastes the soup. It tastes like pork.
How does he know?
So it tastes like pork. So you lied to me. No, I didn't really care. What it doesn't matter. You post on your Facebook page that I didn't know how to taste pork from in a chicken soup. Big deal. So that's why some Rishonim say that you has to be specifically a chef. But other Rishonim say that, like I said, that it's allowed to be. It could be any non-Jew because lemaisa is something that you're going to be able to tell if they lied to you. It's not something normally goyim don't have ne'amonos, are not believed about things related to kashrus. But here, since you're going to find out yourself eventually if they misled you, so then they're not going to lead you astray. So therefore, they do have a certain level of ne'emanus. So the minhag nowadays is that we don't rely on the tasting of non-Jews, at least Ashkenazim don't, maybe some Sephardim do. So we only rely on the shear of 60, which is also, if again, it couldn't be tasted for some reason. Let's say you had a beef soup and a piece of nevela beef fell in. So how would you tell the difference?
Yeah, you can.
So then we rely on the shear of 1 in 60. We assume that unless it's something very pungently flavored.
Or if it's something which alters the entire, like for example, like say you know, rennet, you know.
Correct. If the effect of the non-kosher substance will be felt in the final product, then yes, even if it's less than 1/60, then it would not be butel. But under normal circumstances, if it's we just go with a shear of 60 times. See, where there's a cute thing. So in the olden days, in Europe, it was there were some communities. Well, yes, but most communities you didn't have Sephardim and Ashkenazim living in the same town. Usually they lived in separate areas. So Ashkenazim had no choice to, since their minhag is our minhag is to rely on only on the 1/60 and not the taste of goyim. So you rely on the 1/60, and if it didn't have 1/60, you have to be mevatel the non kosher food. So you would have to throw it out. But let's in Eretz Yisrael, where Sephardim and Ashkenazim live all together. So the following solution was suggested, that if non kosher food or meat and milk, whatever, fell into a pot that you're cooking, and there was not 60 times to be mevatelet, but you suspect that even so, you still probably couldn't taste the prohibited substance. So what should you do? If it's just a little pot you're cooking, it's not a big deal. You would probably just throw it out. But let's say it's a huge pot you're cooking for 100 guests on Shabbos. So what do you? What should Ashkenazi do if he suspects that maybe if that, that there wasn't well, one it's so 1/60?
1/60 would be a huge amount.
Okay. I'm saying if it was more than 1/60, so what should you do? According to the regular Ashkenazi minhag, you would have to throw it out. So some suggest that you do as follows. You get a non-Jew to taste the soup, or whatever you're cooking, and tell a Sephardi. Because Sephardims still, many communities, rely on the tasting of a non-Jew. And then, with relying on this, the Sephardi tastes the soup and says, you know, there's no milk. I can't taste any milk in this chicken soup. It's still kosher. So then the Ashkenazi is not relying on the non-Jew, but the Ashkenazi is relying on another Jew who's testifying to him that this soup is still kosher. Some have suggested that potential solution, yeah?
Okay, just get a little weird here. Supposing you, where does this end? You some piece of cheese, cheese, you can probably.
Oh, if you can see, you have to take it out, of course.
But,
yeah.
Okay, so something gets in there, and you say, well, it was less than a 60th. Okay, the whole thing is kosher. And then it happens again.
Mm-hmm.
And then it happens again and again and again, but you keep saying, well, it was less than a 60th. At some point, though, each little bit is going to add up to more than a 60th.
No, it's a legitimate question that's discussed very much in the.
It's happening over and over again. Okay.
It's called chozer v'neir. It's a halachic concept. Oh. The stuff that was already butel. Whether it can be woken up,
or does it count? You know, does it add to the amount? Not say you had 100 parts of.
Oh, butter. So now if it was already butthole, now it becomes kosher-like. So then, if something else falls in, so does that include it?
Yeah, included.
In the permissible food? These are excellent questions. No, you're right. These are excellent classical questions. That's not a wise guy question. Mm-hmm. Okay. The Chachamim say, in contrast to Rebbe Akiva, this teaches us tam kikker, that the flavor of a prohibition is like the prohibition itself. I call mishras lachi udasa humi boy leil kidatanya mishras litain tam kikker. So that since it's what it means is that if wine is soaked in water, for example, so then since the water will now have the taste of the wine, then it is prohibited for a nazir to eat. Not specifically talking about the bread soaked in wine, but even water soaked in wine. Of sheim shara anovim b'mayim v'yeshvem tam yayin aser mikana tadan lechol yisurim shebetora manozer adana ha'mani rabbanan v'anoda amri k'Rebbe Akiva. Okay, so it says that if you soak grapes in water, and then the water now has the taste of grapes, so then you would not anozer would not be allowed to drink the water. So the regarding tam kikker, that the taste of a non-kosher substance is like the non-kosher substance itself. There are many different explanations. So echad mehem, the best one, v'hu atov l'fi adome, I think it's the best one. Shekol iser she'eno be'eno elish nis'ariv besoch heter v'nosan tambo. So any prohibited substance that is not immediately recognizable, but rather was completely mixed into a permissible substance and imparted its dates. Lapukim is arve mino she'en kanasin astam. So that's a different type of mixture from a mixture what's called min bemino. That if, let's say, you have meat cooking in a pot, you have meat cooking in a pot, and then non-kosher meat falls in of the same kind. So then that's called min bemino. You won't be able to tell the taste. So you would have to, according to the Torah, you would go according to the majority. You wouldn't go according to the taste. You go according to the rove.
You have to.
Go according to the majority. Midrabanan, we would...
Talking about the 60th now.
Midrabanan, you would need 1 in 60, even if it was a taroves min bemino. Even if it was a mixture of the same type of item, you would need 1 in 60, but on a deraisa level, it would be batel even in the majority. The majority rule would apply even nowadays when you have something that's called a taroves yovesh beyovesh, when you have dry things that are mixed together. So, for example, it's not all mixed together in a pot, but you have some stew meat. And you have, say, 5 pieces of stew meat, and then 2 kosher stew meat, and 2 pieces got mixed in, and now it's you don't know which is which. So then you go according to the majority.
You don't buy raw meat?
Argument's sake, we could be talking
why
about
why would you have it in your house anyway?
Yeah.
It's one thing, the cheese
weirder
falls
things
into
have
the,
happened.
Yeah. The cheese falls into the soup. You have cheese. Find out cheese.
Maybe you have a non-Jewish housekeeper.
Ham and cheese sandwich fell into your...
Yeah, but people cooked separately. That was a different kashayla. That didn't get mixed into anything.
Didn't know.
What was that?
No, if you accident...
They bought from a kosher butcher.
The butcher cheats you and sells you non-kosher meat.
So then.
Well, they found out
a
month ago.
Classical thing, what? There are three kosher butchers and one non-kosher butcher, and they,
That's a different job. It's called kavua.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
That you don't have the majority,
one piece
right?
Of meat,
right. If you find the meat, then you go by the majority of butchers.
Okay.
Meat, it's all on the raisa level, but the rabbanan,
we
have more chumras.
You have to return it.
We have more chumras about this, about the meat. But fine. So yeah. But if you don't remember which store you bought it at, then that's called kavua. That's called since these stores are in a fixed place, they never left the. It's their natural habitat, so to speak. The meat with the suffix, the doubt about the meat was started at the natural habitat of the meat in the store. Then it goes. It's called 50-50, kamechza al mechza, and therefore you would not be allowed to eat the meat because even if there are 9 kosher butchers and 1 non-kosher butcher, if you can't remember which one you bought it at, you'd not be allowed to eat the meat. Okay. Alze amru zichron levracha shatam iser aser kimo ikaru shel iser. That even though you can't really tell the substance of the iser, but rather it just imparts its taste, then it's prohibited. If we didn't have this chiddush that the Torah tells us that if you have a mixture where there are 2 different tastes, and the non-kosher thing imparts its taste in the kosher thing. You would think that even in such a case, you would go by the majority of the mixture as opposed to the taste. Min haklal hayadua lanu midin haTorah, the chad betray batel, that under other circumstances, which we explained, that it's things are batel 1 in 2, not 1 in 60. Kolomar beruba doesn't literally mean that there has to be double the amount of permissible substance than the permissible substance. It just means that there has to be a majority of permissible substances against the non-kosher substance. Loshen trei lav davka. It's not the fact that it says 2 to 1 does not specifically mean that. So since we know this rule that the Torah created by telling us that anything soaked in wine is prohibited, so how much do you have to eat in order to incur the penalty? So the Chinuch says, based on the Rambam, that the rule is the same as a regular non-kosher food. So we know that in order to get malchus for eating pork, for example, you need to eat a kezayis, the shear of an olive, within the time of kedei achilas pras, the amount that takes the time it takes to eat a loaf of bread of a certain size, which is different estimates between 2 and 9 minutes. Probably the basic share is like 4 minutes, something like that. So you have to eat a kezias within 4 minutes, for argument's sake right now, 4 minutes. So if you eat the kezias, even though you ate a whole kezias of pork, if you took longer than kedei achilas pras to eat it, you will be exempt from the penalty of malchus. Obviously, it's prohibited to do so, but you'll be exempt from the penalty of malchus. V'zeh adin ba'atzmo shenemar betam moshe nizar min eser beter kezayis b'chdei achilas pras v'ochel men oshir achilas pras v'bidu shiyas an iskeres lo ke'alav. That even if in the mixture you could taste the non-kosher item, and as such you're not allowed to eat any of the mixture at all, you will only receive the penalty of malchus if l'maisa you eat enough of this mixture. There's enough of a ratio that if you're eating this mixture within kedei achilas pras, you would eat the amount of a kezias. Mm-hmm. So in order to get malchus, according to the Rambam, you always need to eat a kezias of the actual forbidden item, mm-hmm. which is as against other Rishonim. That, for example, Rashi and the Rush, other Rishonim say that no, the whole mixture becomes not kosher. And even if you ate a kezias of the mixture within kedei achilas pras, you would receive the penalty of malchus. But the Rambam did not agree with that. You have to eat a kezias not of the mixture, but of the actual prohibited item within a kedei achilas pras.
So you ate the forbidden mixture, and you ate more of it than you were permitted to. So you go to the Beis Din and you tell them, listen, I ate too much of this.
No, for malchus you need witnesses. For going to Gehenna, you don't need witnesses.
Well, there's one big witness.
right. Achal mimenu pachos mikain, ocean is arebo minus or pachos mishir zeh. So if you ate less than the amount of the mixture you would get a kezias of the mixture of the actual prohibited item, or there's the possibility that even if it was more than 1/60th, or if it was a very pungently flavored thing, and even less than 1/60th, you could still tell that the taste of the prohibited item was in the mixture. Nevertheless, it's a possibility that there's such a small amount that even if you would be eating the mixture continuously for the entire time of kedei achilas pras, you would not get to the point of eating a kezias of the actual prohibited item. So, eino lo ke'alav, you would not receive the penalty of lashes. Mokin amru k'tzas mefarshim b'chlal iser taimo v'lamasho l'algos olav u'kolzman shenasim iser tam beter kol kach yilu nis'arebo iser kezias b'chdei achilas pras. De'afabi shelo yadanu kama shir nichnas bo b'masho seis. So even though we don't know exactly how much of the prohibited item got mixed in, Bilokach das harambam zal lefi anira midvara baflo kedusha ledelo lucky lolam ledaito ad atenu sheachal mamasho zizu kezayis o bifnei atzmo o betaruvis kezayis bechadei achilas pras. That it has to be that you would actually have to eat a kezayis of the iser in order to get the penalty of malchus. Next up, meaning that according to other shitas besides the Rambam, even if it was more than 1/60th, if the shear was that if you continued eating the item continuously for the shear of kedei achilas pras, you would get a kezias, you would receive the penalty of malchus even if you ate a kezias of the mixture in kedei achilas pras and not a kezias of the prohibited item. Whereas the Rambam would hold, no. Even if it was mixed in the amount that you could eat a kezias in kedei achilas pras, you didn't actually eat a kezias of the prohibited item in kedei achilas pras, you would not receive the penalty of malchus. Well, if he's varoso zos mash amru sham mishra as lead the time kicker going to shara anovim b'mayim linen isuru shamru the kain velola malchus, meaning that if you would eat something that was 1/60th mixture of non-kosher and kosher, so if it gave the taste, but you would not eat it because I see kedei achilas pras, so that would be an absolute iser, either the rice or the rabbanon, different shitas, but you would certainly not receive the penalty of malchus for such a thing unless you actually ate a kezias in kedei achilas pras.